What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants.
Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful
Mystery.
And I'm JClone779. And let me tell you something, brother. If you like cryptids and you like climbing that mountain on high, and I don't know.
Oh, yeah, brother.
Yeah.
Let me pull these cryptids out of the depths of history into modern day, brother.
I'm going to drag that big, dirty Bigfoot out of the woods, and I'm going to slam him in front of 93,000 screaming Hulkamaniacs.
Is that what he said about, the giant?
Yeah, Andre, that big, dirty giant.
That's what he said.
I loved Andre the Giant. Hulk Hogan, he was cool, but back in the day, as I got older, I didn't like him as much, but Andre the Giant was a monster, like,
you guys
in
need
life.
To look,
he was awesome.
You need to look up his stuff with the Princess Bride. It always just makes me
smile. Oh, Andre the Giant?
Yeah.
He was a good dude.
Because what was the female actor? I've shared the story. Actress. Female actress.
If you said female, that's close. Basically the same thing. Female actor. I cannot remember her name now. It's escaping me. I can picture her face.
But yeah, like when she was cold and shivering, he'd always just use his hand. It would cover the top of my head all the way down my back.
He was a good mountain of a man.
And she was talking. Like, she was never scared to go out whenever they were, like, eat and drink and everything. Because
who would mess with Andre?
Yeah.
He's 8 foot tall and 500 pounds. And
he actually is a shaved Bigfoot.
That's probably what they'd look somewhere, something like that.
I think it's fair. I think he has the rough body shape. Back to the once was's.
Yep, we're back to the one. You know what? Andre the Giant once was. We're losing our giants in the big world.
Yeah.
In the big wrestling world. I don't know.
We're losing all kinds of people.
Yeah, we are. We're losing lots of big people in the world. Names, voices, figures.
This is not a political podcast by any means.
No.
But prayers to Charlie Kirk's family. His daughters. I cried. You can ask Emily. I cried just
thinking about his girls. I mean, yeah, I couldn't even imagine.
That's a family, yeah.
He's got a three-year-old.
Yeah, well, we'll let the DW guys handle that.
I mean, I don't care if you're right or left. It doesn't matter. A man was killed, and it doesn't affect him anymore.
Right.
It affects his kids and his wife and mm-hmm. his family. It just is sad.
Man,
so yeah. Prayers and thoughts.
Yes.
All right, to cryptids.
Yeah, let's bring it back. Bring it back.
All right, so, you know, we went from South America to Papua New Guinea to Komodo. Let's go south a little bit to Australia.
Oh, Australia.
I think I have pretty much all of the continents in here. I'm fairly certain besides Antarctica, and I maybe have an Antarctic one. We'll see.
Okay, so we're swimming across. I've got my Safari ad, and I'm swimming across that, what'd you call that trench, basically, between Australia?
Yeah, I forgot the name of it.
Okay, that was so long, so last week, or maybe Monday?
2 days ago.
Yeah,
sure. We're not recording these back-to-back.
Either way, though, yeah, okay, imagine me in my Safari ad. I'm crossing that into Australia, ooh, and I'm like,
too much sugar in the coffee. I just got, like, straight sugar.
I just go straight coffee, straight milk, and that's it. Gross. About a 50-50 blend.
Oh, I mean, I do mostly coffee, but I do pour a lot of sugar in it.
I just like milk. I can't stand straight black coffee.
We're going to go to an Aboriginal myth.
Mm.
And this one is weird. So it's not a very big creature.
Huh.
And the Aboriginals spoke extremely highly of it. And keep in mind, when white settlers got to Australia, they were talking about all kinds of things, like the bunyip and this. And
yeah,
this
yeah.
creature was talked of in the same circles.
Gotcha. No, can't be that. Never mind.
Huh.
I'm already trying to guess
figure
ahead.
Out which yeah. Oh, for anybody that doesn't know, hopefully you listen to part one.
Oh, yeah. It's part two, yeah.
Yeah, this is game show style, where I will read the rough description of it as when it was still a cryptid. So the whole thing is these were once cryptids, the
right.
once wases. And now they're documented animals.
Right. Just like Fuzzy Wuzzy, once was a bear.
But yeah, they still held this in the same realm as like the bunyip and some of their other creatures.
Okay.
Even though it wasn't physically as formidable. But it was much more as a spiritual creature.
Okay.
And I don't know, there's only so much I can find on Aboriginal folklore and like creation stuff, but like the rainbow serpent and everything
yeah.
like that.
It's really interesting.
This is up there with the rainbow serpent, this creature.
Wow. Okay. So that's
so it's
big,
not,
big
the
hitter.
Rainbow serpent is like the god or the creator.
Kind of, yeah. It brought the knowledge to the land
yes.
of for the Aborigines.
From the dream time.
The dream time, yep.
To modern Australia. This was a creature heavily associated with that passage.
Okay.
It's said to be an astral being that is made flesh.
Wow. From the cosmos.
And it was. There's actually a lot of... The depictions of its astral form and its physical form are very different. And it's the same thing.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of really cool art about this. Due to its very, very unique appearance, it was thought to be an astral beast that was put into flesh.
I want someone to draw us with our physical forms and then our astral
forms
hovering behind them.
But yeah, so it's a very unique appearance. It was also said to be an omen of good luck, change, and adaptability.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they were very rare, even when they were abundant, quote unquote. But when you've seen one, as Aboriginal tribesmen would, they were said to be like, this is a sign of good luck, or it's a sign of great change in your life.
Hmm.
Or it's a sign of you being able to overcome challenges.
Hmm. Something we all need.
This creature signifies all three of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And duality. Mm.
The good and the bad, the white, light and the dark, the black and the white.
The duality of nature specifically
mm-hmm.
is what the creature represented. The cuteness or the softness and the powerfulness. Because even though these things were small mm-hmm. and fluffy,
but they had gnashing teeth and gnashing claws.
Venomous.
Oh.
Spines. Very territorial. The areas that they inhabited were considered areas of high importance to the Aboriginal peoples, said to be gateways or paths to the astral realm. Harming one is said to bring great misfortune, if not straight up death.
Hmm. Like a big frog in a
so again, these
in
are,
Wolverville?
Yes.
D&D reference for Patreon members.
So these guys are said to be guardians of astral, like portals, again, river creatures.
Mm.
So they are mostly aquatic.
So it's another otter.
Kinda. Not really at all. There's no otters in Australia. All
right, check off the list.
Is that your guess?
No.
Oh, let me get to the button.
Nope.
Let me get to the button. That was your guess.
That wasn't my guess.
No.
I'm just feeling it out.
It was like when Aladdin tricked the genie into giving him a free wish.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's the only time it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Anytime you say another animal, I'm counting it as a guess.
Oh, for you're saying that to me.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You got one in.
Hey, I'm just feeling things out. I'm just educating, so speculation.
This happened a lot with Aboriginal and European settlement when we come to creatures. Because as you can tell, I did not give you a lot of information about the creature's actual appearance.
No.
And I think this came to a lot of the language barriers. And Aborigines have an amazing, ancient, gorgeous language with a lot of terms that I don't think European languages had.
Right,
and vice versa. So it's very hard. It was easier to describe a thing for what it did versus to describe a thing how it looked.
Okay.
So when we go to like Bunyip, you know, a season opener, that's why I think the Bunyip looked so different in various areas, because they were describing different creatures, but the term Bunyip was like the monster, the boogeyman.
Right.
So it's our boogeyman is this. Our local boogeyman, I guess, you know.
Okay. Your local backwoods boogeyman.
Yeah, your local backwoods boogeyman. Check out the podcast. Thank you, Jeb. So any clues of what this creature is, or do you want me to give you a little more?
I had a couple. I reduced it down to two right now. One of them I don't even think is in Australia, so it's probably not it.
So it's Australia. Keep in mind, it's Australia. Aborigines. It's known for its very unique appearance.
Okay, I'm going to go with my first guess in here.
Okay.
We're going to go with the echidna.
No, you're wrong.
Okay.
Wait.
Do you get multiple choice?
No, it's the other egg-laying mammal.
Ah, it was the platypus.
It's the platypus.
Ah, dang it.
So, yeah, the platypus was described, and they're very rare and secretive, even in modern day, in areas
right.
where we know there's a lot of platypus.
Yeah, they're hard to find.
There's a couple, and I can't remember where they actually are in Australia. Dave or any of our Australian listeners, let me know. But there's viewing platforms for platypus. Did you know this?
No, I didn't.
So they have a couple areas where a couple big males like to patrol, and males will fight. They're very, very territorial, and they're venomous. Males are venomous.
Right.
Where they have these big spurs on their back legs where they can inject venom. And if you get stung, it friggin' sucks.
What a weird animal.
They are, I mean, yes, there are many reasons. And they are mammals. You remember we got in that fight, like, season two with a listener?
Oh, gosh, no.
He's like, oh, platypus aren't mammals.
Well, then what are they?
They are egg-laying mammals.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just, no, and I actually have some more about their mythology with their biological oddities and everything like that, and their discovery. But when European settlers first got to Australia, they did not believe this thing was real.
Right. They were thinking it was a hoax, right?
The first one that came back to the UK, to the Zoological Society of London, they put it on the table, a taxidermied specimen, and they thought he glued a duckbill
to a
beaver.
With, like, webbed feet.
Oh, yeah. Well, beavers have webbed feet. It literally is like a beaver with a toothed bill.
Right.
And it's not like a duckbill. It actually is fleshy and everything like that, but it is a bill, technically.
Right, yeah.
But it's duck bills are fleshy. You know that's the difference between a beak and a bill, right?
No, I didn't actually.
So our kids just learned this at fair.
Okay.
A beak is exposed bone with like an edge that's like fingernails where it keeps growing.
Yeah, yeah.
A bill has a nice layer of flesh on top of it, nor often has receptors in it.
I guess I never thought about that.
So like one of our kids, literally their duck had a blood blister on the end of its bill. And we're like, what is that? And I'm like, it's fine. He probably pecked the side of the cage too hard. And,
yeah.
You know, it'll go away.
Irritated it. Yeah.
But there's a layer of skin on there. And if you feel a duck, they let you a duck or a goose.
It makes sense.
They're fleshy.
Yeah.
They're a whole thing until you get inside the mouth. It's very fleshy. So the platypus in context to Aboriginal mythologies. The platypus is a creature seen to defy nature. Is an intriguing subject for study and admiration. This unique animal is native to Australia, has captivated scientists in public with its distinctive features and its highly unusual behaviors. It seems to be a hybrid or an amalgamation of many animals and other species' traits. It holds a special place in the tapestry of both biological and mythological narratives. In various cultures, the platypus stands as a symbol of mystery and adaptability, promoting deep exploration into the mythological significance. So basically, the whole thing with this is when an Aborigine said this is such a creature of mixed thing. It's venomous like a reptile. It is furred like a mammal. It lays eggs like a reptile, and it has the bill of a bird.
Yeah.
But it gives its babies milk, and it actually doesn't have nipples. They're kind of different. It has mammillary secretion glands.
Oh.
Which is what a nipple is. It's just not as refined as a nipple.
Okay, primitive nipple.
Yeah. They kind of sweat milk.
Ugh. Ugh. No thanks. I'll pass on the platypus milk.
So that's what they're saying, that this had to be to the dreamland or the dreamtime or the astral plane. These were creatures mixed of both worlds because they were so hodgepodge mixed up together.
Yeah,
that it had such a high spiritual significance.
When the
settlers or the Europeans were talking to the Aborigines, they held these things in really, really high regard, and they were like, these are spiritual beings
because they're glitches in the matrix. Their code, essentially, their code got corrupted when they were being created.
In any place where they would find them, they would hold as sacred.
Yeah,
that this is highly a spiritual area.
Someone CRISPR'd the natural DNA of the land, made a platypus.
There you go. Finally used it right.
There we go. Yeah. One of these days.
So let's talk about their oddness. You know, they're egg-laying mammals.
That's one.
The platypus is one of the few mammals that lays eggs instead of giving birth to live young, which is normally one of the things to classify as a mammal.
Right.
So you remember the three to classify as a mammal?
Our live birth?
Mm-hmm.
Is it fur or hair?
Facial hair.
Facial hair. Okay. And then three, milk production?
Milk.
Yeah.
And then there used to be warm-blooded.
Until the cave goat.
Until the awful, awful cave goat.
But he's...
And then there was a new study saying that they weren't cold-blooded. Did you see that came out, like, this year?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then everybody is like, that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, the cave goats, well, they're in hell now.
I'm still a little sick.
That's from a quote from a movie?
It's a great movie. The Sasquologist.
Yeah, it's great.
They're venomous. So they're...
It's well-filmed.
Venomous spurs. Yeah, Joe Van Gogh. Great. Yeah.
Filmed it very well.
Males possess a venomous spur on their hind legs, a rare feature among any mammals. You could probably count on one, or probably both your hands, with the venomous mammals.
Gosh.
And they're very weird. Like, there's not like a family group that's venomous.
Right, yeah. It's just random one-offs.
Like, the slow loris is venomous, but it leaks out of its armpit.
Ugh.
This is the only one I can think of a modern-day mammal that has a big spur that they deliver venom with.
Hmm.
It's mostly for fighting other males and protecting territory. But they also have electrolocation. So that bill is actually a specialized electric recepting organ.
So now we're getting into fish territory, too.
Mm-hmm. The platypus is adapted to detecting electric fields generated by movement and prey and their hearts beating.
I mean, this is quite the animal if you really just break it down and think about it. Come on. Like, something's going on here. Like, there's nothing else in nature that just...
Their closest cousin is very similar. Has a lot of these same features.
Like, oh, really?
The echidna.
Well, yeah.
The other egg-laying mammal.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But they're... Like,
where did these come from? I don't know. I'm just saying, just so weird. I'd like to trace back their origins if we could have that ability to, but...
So, some Aboriginal tales describe the platypus as a creature made by the distinct astral being, which is why it emphasizes its uniqueness.
Mm.
So, this is one of, like, they say... Depending on which Aboriginal folklore you get into, or not folklore, sorry, creation, creation legends and spirituality and everything like that.
Yeah,
Which is, I find it extremely fascinating that when Europeans got there, they were talking, they were like, these are spiritual beings.
Right.
Didn't go good for the platypus. They got really rare, they got much more rare really fast. Quick.
Oh, that's not good.
They made good hats.
Oh, no.
Hats and gloves.
I know I've mentioned it many a times, but I always watch this Aborigine documentary just randomly every now and then. I always go back to it because it's awesome.
One of my favorite cultures to look into.
They're so cool. It's awesome. And but they talked about, like, you know, all the cave paintings they have there, and they depict all the animals, you know, herds of whatever, not deer, but, you know, these animals over here.
Dicoptodon, I think is what it was, giant marsupial wombat.
Oh, okay.
That they had cave paintings of before they ever discovered the bones of it.
See, I had that theory or thought that them making those cave paintings, but they also use, like you talked about, these beings that they talked about referenced in the dream time, and they basically talked to them as like these tall, like thinly ghostly, like...
They either look
apparitions.
Like Fresno Nightcrawlers, or they look like greys.
Yeah, something like that.
I've seen. We talked about that. We've seen both.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And they depict them too as well. But they said that those are the people that kind of helped them in early on stages and kind of gave them knowledge and taught them how to live on the land and taught them all these sorts of things. And I just had this theory, like with cave paintings, because throughout not just Australia, but even here in the U.S., throughout the world, any discovery of ancient, I guess, caves, and we find their art and stuff, there's always cave paintings of animals and stuff like that. Now, I had a couple theories. What if what if that's just depicting where those animals are, kind of like a map? Okay, you know, it's over this way. These animals are over this way. This animals, we can find them over here. This is our central gathering point where we can go get these things. But I also had this other theory after watching the Aboriginal documentary thing is, you know, the mind can create these things. Our mind can create anything in the world. And you just put your mind to it and you can make it happen. But I'm always wondering, like, what if back in the early, early days, you know, very few humans and we're... there's a global reset, you know, natural disasters like Noah and the flood, you know. What if these paintings and stuff were, I guess, just physical? They were using them as, like, to manifest these animals outside of the cave. You know what I mean? Like, okay, we need, like, these types of animals and these and maybe these creatures, these beings were teaching them how to do this. But I always just had that kind of theory that they drew the animals they wanted to hunt. They drew the animals they wanted to catch from what the people taught them. You know what I mean?
Here's why I don't believe that at all. They would have drawn easier things.
Mm-hmm.
Australia is on hard mode.
Well, I think each...
Megalania.
Isn't it how each continent has their own kind of unique fauna?
But if you're the one that gets to pick and choose...
Well, I mean, but
you know, I want a lot of little deer.
You might not know,
though. I don't want the 50-foot long monitor lizard.
In the early days, though, they might not know, like, what some of these... And, you know, what you draw may not exactly necessarily translate. You know, like, when you pray for something and it comes true, and you get it in a form that you weren't really expecting. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, you know, it could be something, like, similar to that. Like, I just think they were creating these animals, or I had thought, theory in my head, that they were creating these animals, and but maybe they were taught, like,
it's,
what types
that's
and,
why I
like,
don't
education.
Believe in it.
Yeah, but I don't know. We don't know. Different times. We don't know what was going through their heads.
So, they were first discovered by European naturalists, and I mean by the Western Society, in 1799.
It's a long time ago.
And they brought it to England, and basically got laughed out of the conservancy for sewing animals together.
But then, how did they not realize, though, like, this is really good work, though?
Keep in mind, it's 1799 taxidermy. Even when it was taxidermied, it probably wasn't great.
I understand. But still, like...
As
real as it was, you would imagine, though, it would have looked even worse.
Have you seen 1799 taxidermy? The lions that have human smiles and stuff like that?
But also imagine them actually trying to stitch together duck bills and different parts, how terrible it actually look. The fact that
it probably looks the same.
Ah, I disagree.
In this time, it's not like modern day.
I still disagree.
I think it's probably the same.
I just think the differences would be because it's already real. Like, you can't screw up what's already there.
And then when they were discovered at the turn of the century, they were hunted for food. And they were also hunted for their fur. Then they didn't become a protected species until 1912.
Oh.
But there is good news. So they got downgraded. So they went up. They went from near threatened to threatened. They went from near threatened to threatened, and then they were going to get to endangered, and they got put back down to threatened.
Either that's true and we're saving them, or they're just lying.
I think now that they are so popular, that they are, they're iconic, they're cute. They are the one of the Australian animals.
Yeah.
Like, and they have been introduced in other areas where they probably weren't native to, other wetlands in Australia. I think now it's just,
Well, good.
But Chinese sailors would catch them and bring them back. Like, they would call them, basically the name transfers to, the name platypus means flat or flippered foot.
Hmm.
And it's platypus, which means broad, wide, or flat. And then puso, which means foot.
Gotcha.
So they were... There is, you can actually find depictions of platypus in some Chinese literature from, you know, let's see, from 1600s. You can find them, there's just like a little, like they would end up in menageries and like sailors would trade them around and stuff like that.
Okay.
So this was just like we'll talk about later with unicorns. Like they were, the world knew about them-ish.
Okay.
They knew there was this weird amalgamation monster.
Yeah.
And there was a couple Chinese emperors that had humongous menageries of animals. And, like, they'd get Kirins, and they'd get dragons, and then they'd get these
giraffes.
Guys. That was the Kirin.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that was the platypus was a once was. You want any more about it, or?
I mean, no, they're very interesting. It's a shame, though, that they were being hunted for food.
And fur.
And fur. The fur, I guess, I a little bit more understand. But, like, to hunt one just to eat it?
I think I'd rather hunt an animal for food rather than its fur.
Well, I mean, but fur, at least it's down, probably provides good protection. It's fur, you know what I mean?
So they are, platypus and echidnas are big questions to the evolutionary theory.
Right.
If it matters for everybody at home. Because their closest relatives that we can even kind of guess at are marsupials.
Okay.
And they're not very close to that. And it's because of the odd way marsupials give birth is kind of one of the hints. Where they have their wombs externally.
Yeah.
Or pouches.
Yeah.
Where the babies, they give birth, and then the babies have to crawl to the womb.
Like possums and
but like
koalas.
Like when kangaroos give birth, they only have two nipples.
So only two can make it.
Yeah, but they have like 30 little jelly beans in the mom lead. And then there is a common ancestor that went extinct roughly 12,000 years ago between echidnas and platypus that looks like a hybrid between those two.
Oh, really?
Like, so echidnas have like a bill.
Yeah.
It's just that long, thin one. So it's wider than that, but it's not like duck-billed. And it's got digging feet on the front, web feet on the back, and a halfway flat tail.
It sounds aquatic.
I mean, yeah, it was probably starting to make that venture.
Yeah.
But yeah, any questions about them?
No, they're pretty neat.
Yeah. You can still see a platypus fur capes at the National Gallery of Victoria.
Ooh. I've never felt or seen a platypus.
I've never felt a platypus.
That would be neat. I've
been very blessed with touching and holding a lot of endangered or really, really rare animals.
Uh-huh.
Platypus has not been on that list.
Hmm.
Are there any in the United States? Didn't we talk about this before?
I don't remember.
I think one zoo has them even in the United States.
Okay.
They're very protected, like pandas. They're very protected. Yeah. Except unlike pandas, they're real.
Yeah. And then there's no more pandas in the United States. China took them all back.
Yeah. Because they were dying out.
Yes.
They're still dying out because they were a crated species. The Ati. All right. We're going to a whole different continent.
Where are we going?
Africa.
Okay. I'll get the boat out.
The Ati. It's Central African tribes and ancient Egyptians depicted this bizarre creature for centuries. Colloquially, it's been dubbed modern day as the... I'm not even going to tell you. I'll wait because I think it'll give it away. But the Ati is one of the famous cryptid names for it. It is a gigantic herbivorous animal. And for its size, it is extremely well hidden.
Mm.
It was not discovered. So... Excuse me. Despite its descriptions from explorers and even a couple skins being turned in, Western science rejected the existence of such a gigantic creature living in these areas as nothing more than a fantastical chimera of real animals. So this thing is just said to be absolutely giant. It's huge neck, giant front limbs. It is just a powerhouse. It's like halfway between an elephant and a boar. But it's super quiet. And it can be hidden like nothing else. So everybody just said it's not real. So they actually, after this, you know, came back to England. And they brought pieces of pelts and stuff like that. And they're like, so they determined expeditions uncovered absolutely nothing.
Of course.
And that's why they dubbed it the African unicorn, because it was just a mythical nonsense that they were hunting. So they, like a ghost in the darkness. They were literally sending all these people to hunt nothing.
But I'm sure they asked the locals, and the locals were all like, yeah, sure, it's out there. And they're like, nah, they don't know nothing.
They actually have a whole place named after them.
I'm an exploring European, and I know everything.
So this changed all in 1901 when Sir Henry Johnson, the British governor of Uganda, obtained pieces of striped skin and even a skull of the legendary beast of the Congo. Though the evidence was eventually captured of the live specimen, then we recognize what the animal was by mainstream science. So before I get into all that, this creature was said to be, it was really odd. It's up there in the same areas as like Mokele and Mbembe.
Yep.
So now another cryptid from the same area was caped lions.
Cave lions?
Caped.
Oh, caped. Okay.
A subspecies of African lion that are huge and like water. Mm-hmm. Like they love water.
Okay.
So don't jump in the water because they will come for you. But they hunt mostly buffalo. So they're big and bulkier.
Okay.
These guys are, like I said, really big, extremely skittish, semi-aquatic. There is a whole valley named after them. I think you already know what it is.
I already know. I knew it away.
I have a little comment saying this is your favorite animal.
It's up there. It's up there. Well, this would be
the woodland giraffe, the very famous, as featured on Freaky Fauna Friday, the okapi.
It is not.
Yeah, it is. You can't fool me on this one.
The okapi, the poster child for cryptids.
Yeah. They're real. These things are real.
It was called the Ati.
Okay.
It was its original Congo name. And there was other ones. So the Opi, which is one of the Egyptian names for it, which is a hybrid between a giraffe, a zebra, and a donkey, is how they described it.
Okay.
But yeah. So there's literally, they found them in the Valley of Giraffes.
Right, yeah. But there's no giraffes there.
Yeah, that's pretty much. So yeah. They, through the evidence of capturing a live specimen, they finally known it as the okapi, was recognized by mainstream science. The okapi is still no less unusual today. It's the only living relative of giraffes, sharing a roughly similar body structure and the characteristic long blue tongue of the group.
Ah.
However, their markings on their back legs resemble zebras. Okapis are solitary creatures and remain captivating to scientists. Although they're not endangered, there's still much to learn about their habitats and lifestyles, and we'll get into all kinds of stuff with the okapi. So the okapi was one where it was not, we'll talk about when it was actually discovered. It was not discovered until like modern day by mainstream science.
Okay.
And like you mentioned, the Congo natives, which are they Congolese? Is that the right word?
Congolese, maybe.
Congolese.
I think. I really don't know.
The natives of Congo and
there you go.
Ancient Egyptians had depictions of this creature.
In my head, you said ancient aliens.
Ancient aliens.
Like, okay, Egyptians. You did say Egyptians. And ancient astronaut theorists
built the pyramids.
And they said, did these okapi come from outer space? Well, ancient astronauts theorists say, yes, they did. They did build the pyramids. Why do you think they're so tall? It's to accommodate their long necks.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you need something quick and convenient like my family does, my ultimate high-protein dinner hack is grabbing pre-marinated steak tips and making them extra crispy and charred in the air fryer while the inside stays juicy and medium rare. I can't say enough about the convenience of Omaha Steaks. Thanks to them, I always have the highest quality proteins on hand. Enjoy exceptional flavor in the convenience of Omaha Steaks during their Spring Savings event. Omaha Steaks is your weeknight win. And right now, you can get the world's best everyday protein during their Spring Savings event. Go to omahasteaks.com for an extra $35 off when you use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to shop their Spring Savings event and use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, the okapi is
a symbol
of the International Society of Cryptozoology. It's okay. The okapi's the actual symbol.
The poster boy.
But yeah, it was. They described the only reason it got coined unicorn is because a lot of the Europeans did not believe it was real.
Gotcha.
And a lot of people would be shown chunks of them and stuff like that, pieces, because they were so, so rare.
Yeah.
I mean, the natives were talking about them. This is the same group where they're talking about rhino killers, and they're talking about Mokelian Bembe. Mm-hmm. And everything like that. So this is kind of getting lumped in for a long, long time. It was lumped in with all those guys, which I believe all of those are real. And we've talked about, we've done several episodes on both of those creatures. Mm-hmm. So to me, that brings credit to the other ones too, of being extremely large, but also being extremely secretive.
Yeah.
This is literally a giraffe that lives in the rainforest that hid for a really, really long time.
Well, you know, people say, we know Bigfoot can't exist in the woods. Where's it going to go? There's not enough space. I would have seen it one by now. I'm in the woods all the time.
Aerodactyla is the order.
Okay. Well, then here's this giraffe that, hey, it's real.
The Dominican Republic of the Congo, it's Intra Forest, which is one of its big rainforests. It's the symbol for that, too. It's found in the rainforest of the Congo region, though Okapi was unknown to science until roughly 1901, when British explorer Sir Henry Hamilton Johnson first sent bits of its hide back to the British Museum. However, there was a first report of this mysterious creature in 1890.
Mm.
to the, you know, to the British Museum. But they did not believe them. Remember what we just talked about? They were like, that doesn't, that's not real. Even though they're sending pieces, once again, they're like hodgepodge. And I want to make that clear. There were people being malicious.
Oh, doing that.
And sewing things together.
Like the fur-bearing trout.
I mean, even before, like, that was happening.
Yeah.
But there were plenty, like Fiji mermaids and all that.
For sure.
There was a bunch of stuff getting sewn together and sent to the British Natural History Museum. And to be like, I discovered this new species.
It doesn't matter what era you're living in. There's always going to be a scam artist.
Always scam artist.
Just trying to get one over on you. Always. All the time.
Although it is related to giraffes, it is distinctly different. Okapis have a shorter, wider neck and shorter legs. They are more heavily and stocky built than their cousins. Their side of their face is pale white. Their forehead and ears have a dull reddish cast. Their buttocks, thighs, and the tops of their forelegs have horizontal stripes of black and white. The lower parts of their legs have black rings above the hoofs. So this is the thing. Okapis are really, really good at camouflaging. It is amazing how big they are and how easily they just disappear into the rainforest.
That's wild.
So the stripes is thought to break up their leg silhouettes. Their bodies are high enough off the ground that they may not need them as much. But, you know, the legs of their creatures. So even if a predator is hunting them, like a leopard.
Yeah. I've also heard that the black and white, I don't know if it's true, like keeps
bugs away.
Bugs away.
It does.
So, you know, that's kind of cool.
People paint their cows and horses.
Yeah, that's where I've seen it. Yeah.
They can be up to 8 feet long. About 6 to 7 feet tall at the shoulder, or sorry, 5 feet at the shoulder and 6 to 7 feet tall at the head.
Oh, that's not that tall. Like it is, but it's not.
That's a size of a very large horse.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, for a giraffe though, I'm thinking like.
It's a giraffe, like, it's the thing, it's a giraffe relative.
Right, yeah. That's kind of cool though. It's
400 to 600 pounds typically.
Mm-hmm. More manageable.
Adult females are slightly taller and weigh slightly more than adult males. So adult females can be up to 800 pounds.
Wow.
Their eyes and ears are both sexes are extremely large and their tongues are long and prehensile. Males have shorter horns and completely covered in skin except for the tips. Most females do not, I'm sorry, males have short horns, not shorter horns. They have short horns. When females do not possess any horns, they often display little nubs or bumps in their place. So that's very, very small if it's any.
Right. Yeah. For the females.
Yes.
So they're bigger, but got smaller bumps.
Mm-hmm. The okapi is extremely shy, solitary, and elusive, and lives in the densest parts of the rainforest. Their favorite foods are leaves, fungi, and fruit.
Mmm.
Uses its long tongue to help, you know, get the branches and strip it. It has been witnessed eating clay, burnt woods, and bat guano to supplement its diet.
Sometimes you need those nutrients.
Their big predator is leopards. They do not like leopards.
Okay.
Captive okapis may succumb to infection from Monodontia giraffi, which is a parasitic nematode that can damage their bile ducts. Mm. So it's a giraffe disease. So when they get in contact, they're very solitary. So they don't run into each other very often. Okapis have been exhibited in many zoo gardens and is successfully bred in captivity. You want to guess how long they gestate?
8 months.
16.
Oh, wow.
They can live up to 30, though. They're sexually mature at 2 years.
Hmm.
Any questions?
No,
they are an endangered red list species. They're endangered. They estimate that it's only like 4,500 individuals are left in the wild, and more than 40% of their population has been killed since 1995.
Oh, that's sad. They're definitely more manageable than just big old regular giraffes. I think this is maybe one that I wouldn't mind having a saddle on and just riding to work.
I don't know if you could ride them. I don't know if they're back.
Custom saddle.
But yeah, the okapi that all these natives talking about.
Yeah.
This creature in the rainforest, the giraffe. You know, they literally called it the Valley of Giraffes is what it translated to, and it's still there.
Not the European forest. Yeah, that does not exist. These people are
giraffes don't live in forest.
Yeah, come on.
Logging is also a huge part, and then conflicts. Conflicts are a huge part.
Well, yeah, the Congo's constantly under a state of war.
They are hunted right now for meat, and their areas where they're being hunted for meat, they're pretty much gone from. Mm. They're not a high abundancy species.
Gotcha.
So after you kill a couple, you can really clear out an area of them really fast.
That's not good.
And they take a long time to gestate. They only have 1 to 2 babies.
It's a slow turnaround.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you got that one right.
Yeah.
You ready for the next one? We may get four in this episode.
All right.
Some of them are pretty short. This one is another poster child. The Kraken.
Yeah, just gave it away right away. No. Where's this one coming from?
The ocean?
You're doing the Kraken. You just said it?
It's the Kraken. That's the name of the creature, the cryptid.
Oh, okay.
I've been giving you the cryptid names.
Okay. Well, everyone knows the Kraken.
The Kraken is not an actual animal. You can't point to the Kraken.
Yeah, I seen it in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Caribbean.
That's Pirates of the Caribbean.
Caribbean.
You don't say Pirates of the Caribbean. That's not how
you say that. I have heard people say it.
Yeah, and they're wrong.
No, so it's not just the Kraken. We're talking about the Luska, which is Caribbean. Scylla, which is ancient Greece. Some types of sea monk, which is medieval Europe. And the Norse Kraken, obviously.
Okay, so we're in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah. So tales of basically enormous tentacled creatures that would encircle whole ships. And some ancient tales said they could encircle the whole world. Aristotle and Pliny the Elder both describe such monsters. And like I already said, the Luska, Scylla, sea monks all describe bizarre, dangerous nautical creatures with massive tentacles. Perhaps the most famous, obviously, is the Norse Kraken, which there's two versions of the Norse Kraken, which we've talked about. Okay. There is the crustacean version, and then there is the tentacled version.
Okay.
So specifically, we're talking about the tentacled version. And it was said that these creatures were able to either, depending on which legends and lore, could break apart a ship, devour a ship, or even devour an island.
That's pretty powerful.
Prior to the 1870s, scientific opinion on such creatures was noted as being nothing more than ridiculous myths, on par with mermaids and sea serpents. Despite this, there was tons of investigations in the existence of legendary krakens that took place in the early 1840s. Danish zoologist Jonah Jespersen Stiprasus methodically researched and cataloged giant kraken sightings and strandings where people would claim that giant krakens would wash up on the beach.
Oh.
Eventually, he went and examined a beached corpse and designed the beast's scientific name, which is...
El Kraken.
Arctotuthis.
Oh, okay. Wait. Okay, go on. Keep going.
Even so, fellow scientists basically said he was dumb. That he's playing.
Yes. I know what this is now.
Okay. You want to take a crack at it, or you want me to...
Ha! A crack at it?
Cracking at it?
Yeah.
Okay, who's the Kraken?
Is it, by chance, the giant squid?
I'll give you half points. So okay,
the colossal squid. Colossal squid.
It's both.
Okay.
There. You get the chimes for half point.
Ooh. That one felt nicer than the cheers. Yeah. I got a little tingle.
Yes. It is the giant. gosh, idiots.
I know. I'm sorry.
We're idiots.
Oh, man.
No, so in 1870s, the skepticism stopped, though, when several carcasses were beached in Labrador in Newfoundland. And they dragged the corpses to the Zoological Society and dropped them in front of them. These big rotting piles of tentacles.
When was this?
1870s.
So why do I remember growing up like...
Now, I'll get to that.
Okay.
I do know what you're going to say. Yeah. Why do you remember them? They haven't discovered them until X.
Correct.
It was because they haven't filmed a live one until you were a kid.
Okay.
Nobody had seen a live one that wasn't actively dying.
Gotcha. Okay.
So a couple of the live ones that were seen... We're like in the death thralls.
Do you know how scary that would be being in the water?
With a dying one or with one?
With one.
So we'll talk about their smaller cousins because they are.
Humboldt squids, yeah.
They are monsters. Yeah. These things are monsters.
Yeah.
Giant squids and colossal squids aren't nearly as ferocious.
That we know of.
That we've witnessed.
Correct. Correct, because
Humboldt squids will eat you.
Oh, for sure.
They have eaten people.
Because we've seen, I remember growing up, them like speculating about, that's what I was like.
Because pieces and dead right. corpses. So,
and they find the evidence on the whales, like the suction suckers on the whale's face.
So whaling was huge, like we've talked about, in the 17th, 18th, and into the 19th. So they would find the beaks inside the digestive tract of sperm whales.
Oh my gosh.
So the thought was that they were just oversized beaks, not oversized squids.
Good thought, logical.
So giant tentacles in complete corpses revealed the scientific world that the giant squid was indeed real. But nobody, I mean, they remained mysterious mm-hmm. and rare until modern day. We now think they live in typical depths, are typically deep squids, and are common and often undocumented. For centuries, scientists debated where their basically natural habitat were. They would go and search for them and failed. Only in 2004, when you were a kid, a group of Japanese scientists caught a live giant squid on camera, taking 500 automatic photographs of the creature as it swam back into the darkness. Basically, they lured it in. The guy made a fake lure, a light-up lure.
Yeah.
And it came in and engulfed the whole thing, and it, okay, that's not food, and it left.
That's wild.
So they kind of figured it out, but there's tons more. Many questions still remain about the giant squid. First off, we do not know how old they live to be.
Right.
Most squid species, and cephalopods in general, die after they reproduce.
Mm.
So the males die after they breed.
Didn't know that.
And the females die in like nest guarding and everything like that. Or they just devote so much of their body mass.
Yeah.
And then they die.
Didn't know that.
Everything from little squids to big, like the giant Pacific octopus that get 35 feet across.
So really?
Yeah. They all die after they, and then that's the only reason.
The ultimate sacrifice.
Oh, they're very good parents. Squids aren't nearly as good of parents. But they basically melt down their organs to make eggs.
Oh, fair enough.
So they don't stick around because they're dead.
Yeah, that's fair. That's still being a good parent though. Like you're.
So with the tentacles,
I'll melt my organs for my kid.
With the tentacles, our largest complete specimens that we kind of know about are around 40 to 45 feet long for the giant squid.
Yeah,
and there's no good. I've looked for a weight estimate.
Mm-hmm. For giant squids,
right. At 45 feet long, I've seen it as low as 150 pounds because a big part of their mantle is hollow and a big part of their length is just tentacles.
Right, it makes sense.
And they're very narrow, long animals like a snake,
spindly.
Yeah, and I've seen up to 1,000 pounds.
Okay,
I'm gonna personally guess it's somewhere in the middle, like 400 pounds.
That's probably fair.
I think they're. I mean, a 45 foot squid is probably around 400-500 pounds. Because they use ammonia to balance out their water. So they have an organ. They're just really hollow in big chunks of their body.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't even until later that their colossal cousin was discovered.
Yes.
The bigger squid.
Now, are they bigger as in length, but they're bigger as in now, mass? Now,
here's the thing, is giant squids, the 45-foot individuals, we think are only 2.5 years old.
Wow.
2.5 to 4.
Okay.
We do not know how old they live. Huh. So giant squids are incredibly rare. Colossal squids are even more rare. It's just we don't know anything about them. So the ones we found, they estimated that there was a living one that was hooked onto a ship in the Antarctic, either the Antarctic or the Arctic. I've lost my train of thought. It was in the Arctic Ocean. Colossals are cold water species.
Okay.
That's their big difference.
Okay.
So that's why they get so much bigger.
They're thick with two C's.
So the ones we found were like 40 feet long, so they weren't as long as giant squids, 35 to 40 feet. But we estimated the weight of that big one that was hitting the side of that ship
was
like 3,000 pounds.
Gosh. And that's colossal.
That's the colossal squid.
Okay. I remember hearing stories
and we know nothing about them.
Right.
We know nothing. That could have been a baby. For all we know. We don't know anything about them.
It'd literally be the real Kraken, the baby.
But I think they are. I mean, so now for the Kraken legends. If giant squid, so they come up to the surface to feed, or they come shallower to feed, they move. It's the greatest migration on Earth happens every day.
Okay.
The biggest migration of biomass ever happens every day, where it's the trophic cascade, where basically deep water animals follow up the night.
Gotcha.
Into the surface and go back down.
Yep.
It's probably quadrillions of pounds. I mean, you can't calculate it because
the ocean's huge.
Algae to plankton to krill to, you know, up to giant squids and whales.
Yeah.
It's everything. So what happens, though, they have ammonia-based flotation or buoyancy. If they go too high or they spend too long on the surface, they can kind of get stuck for a bit because the ammonia warms up too much.
Gotcha. So they
become
go back
too
down.
Buoyant.
Can't sink.
When this happens, they become very, very distraught, obviously, and they will lash out. There is a video of this happening with a paddleboarder. Then a giant squid is a small giant squid.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, probably 20 feet long, but was attacking the paddleboard because it was thought that the paddleboard was attacking it because it was stranded.
Oh, gosh.
So its tentacles are wrapped around and it's like slapping at it and stuff like that. So I wonder, in the olden days, if this was more common when we were traveling to open ocean, hitting larger ones where they were stuck or feeding.
Yeah.
Or why did whales attack whaling ships? Do you remember? When we did the
bad history?
No, it was because sometimes they would creak and sound like bull sperm whales.
Yep. I remember that now.
Which is the number one predator for giant squid and colossal squid.
Okay.
So I wonder if there's something to play in that too. Is that's why they don't attack modern ships, because they don't make the same noise.
Right.
So it's more out of not a predatory action, a defensive action. You know, this big thing that's making the sounds of a bull sperm whale.
Right over you, and you're distraught already.
And so you start smacking it.
Yeah.
And this caused these legends and stories. But this has been, for thousands of years, thousands and thousands of years, talked about giant squid, colossal squid.
Oh, yeah.
But a live one wasn't filmed of a giant squid until 2004, and the other one wasn't filmed until 2013.
That's wild.
And it was because it was caught on a long line.
Wow. I mean, just we don't know. We barely discovered or explored our oceans at all. We don't know what's in there.
We know nothing. But yeah, so that was one. You got one.
Or a half one, you kind of called it. I remember a story like watching the Discovery Channel back in the day. There was a story about a guy on a ship, and he remembers seeing a volleyball or basketball-sized eyeball.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
At the surface, swimming by and looked up at him, but that's all he saw was that eye.
The rest of it's probably camouflaged.
Oh, probably. It was nighttime, too. Mm-hmm. But just trying to extrapolate, I guess, the size of that.
They have absolutely massive eyes. The one at Smithsonian is tiny. I want to make that clear, because you can go see one, a preserved specimen, and it's pretty big, don't get me wrong, but it's tiny compared to what they can get.
Gotcha.
And because when we went to the Natural History Museum at the Smithsonian, everybody was like,
You went to where?
The Natural History Museum.
And?
The Smithsonian. It's at the Smithsonian.
Ugh.
I mean, I don't like the Smithsonian as a group, but we've talked about that when we did these episodes. That the front of house and the back of house are different
things.
They don't
mix and match.
Yeah.
You know, because I bet the Smithsonian would like to get rid of some of these animals' history and stuff, or just make sure that they don't exist
anymore. Well, that's why they don't have the big one on display.
Right, yeah.
They actually get 400 feet long. And there was a study, when they were filming Humboldt squids, because the Humboldt squid's main predators are what they think are giant squids.
Okay.
And they think that they're preying upon other squids. So they put that camera on Humboldt squids, and they have one video, if the photo estimates are accurate, and you can look this up, it was on Animal Planet or Discovery, I can't remember now, where they were looking for the giants. And the last video you see is the tentacle spread of this squid about to get eaten by another squid.
Oh, wow. So
the tentacles are opening up like a big net to grab him. And he was struggling already, getting attacked by other Humboldts.
Huh.
So, and then he fell, and then you just see all these other Humboldts just disappear.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then this monster comes out of the darkness.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's really cool photos. The one estimate, so it's, I think there's conservative estimates putting it like an 80-foot spread, which would put it bigger than any giant squid that's been discovered, but not implausible for their, you know, upper sizes.
Yeah.
And then one was like 150-foot wide spread, which would have been like a 90-foot long squid, which I think is accurate. So they're invertebrates. They're not heavily built.
Yeah, yeah.
Half of their body length, or over half their body length, is in their, so the tentacles, not the arms.
Okay, just
two projectiles.
Yeah, yeah.
That they grab food with.
Yeah. Those are tentacles?
Yes.
So what are arms?
The other ones. Just like an octopus has 8 arms.
Yeah.
Even though they're not kind of tentacle. It doesn't mean anything. It's okay. Just like scientific definition separate.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out which so I can sound smarter when I'm talking to the guy at the grocery store checking out. Like, you know, giant squids and their arms, you know.
But yeah, I mean, that was one I've always been fascinated with, because the deep ocean we know absolutely nothing about. And these are iconic monsters. And like you said, the marks on whales, there was a guy that did a beak study on whales in like the 80s. And if his study was accurate, and there were some people that tried to discredit this study.
Yeah, debunk him.
But some of these chunks out of these whales would have been like 5 or 6 times the size of modern day giant squids.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
But
really big shoe.
We don't know how old they are when they reproduce. We've never seen, you know.
True.
So it's not just the ones we're getting could be babies. The sample size is tiny.
Well, and what if there's one that just like, no, I'm not reproducing. I'm going to be the king.
So that's what happens with conger eels.
Yeah.
When they go sterile. Is because conger eels go and breed and die like other eels. So if they're sterile, they don't leave and they just get massive.
monsters.
I mean, they are. They're scary. They would eat you.
Maybe.
Anything? Anything else for giant squid and colossal squid? I kind of put them together as one because they, as far as the legends go, I couldn't tell you which was which.
Right, we're talking about. Yeah,
so we don't know. The Kraken is probably the colossal squid just because the waters they were inhabiting.
Yeah.
Giant squids are typically considered tropical or neotropical, and which just means found closer to the equator.
Right.
And they live in very deep water. We think they actually spend the days in trenches, and at night they come out and adventure around.
Imagine that sea cave.
It's just a trench. It's just a big hole, and you look in it, and it's just full of tentacles and eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
But they follow the water level up, and they are still sight predators.
Okay,
so that should tell you that they're not primarily feeding in pitch black environments.
Wonder if they could probably see in different spectrums too, though.
I haven't looked into that, so I don't know.
I'm sure we don't know anything about their.
Well, we have their eyes and stuff like that.
Okay,
I mean we have a lot of.
Yeah,
I think we have probably. I looked it up, around 100 or so. Specimens of giant and maybe 4 or 5 colossal that we know are colossals. Wow. We have a lot more baby colossals
because
they were catching them in deep sea trawler nets,
yeah.
Little ones, and they didn't know what species it belonged to.
Yeah.
Looks like eels and stuff like that. Babies, a lot of those guys all look the same.
Okay, like glass eels.
Yeah, yeah. All the baby eels look the same. We talked about it with like ducks. All baby ducks look the same. Tapirs, they're not on the same continent. And both their babies look the same.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, yeah. We did that episode. Yeah. Hyenas.
Yeah. Where all babies look the same until they get adult, and then completely different colors and patterns and everything else.
Right, yeah.
Well, yeah. Do you think we have time for one more? We're at 53.
Is it a quick... Wait, maybe we can squeeze a quick one in if you want.
I don't have a lot on this guy, and you're not going to get it.
Let's do him, then. Let's finish with this one.
Okay.
For this week.
Okay. So we're going back to Australia.
Oh, good day, mate. Good thing I left my shrimp on the Barbie back there. Better go back and get it.
The Bond Edgezo. The Bond Edgezo.
Okay.
So, for Western scientists, a cryptid known as... It was coming from the stories in the late 1980s.
Wow.
When Tim Flannery, which we've talked about him already, a senior researcher for the Australian Museum of Sydney, received a photograph of some mysterious unknown creatures that all the locals called the Bond Edgezo. Or the Bond Edgezo, it's Aboriginal. I don't know how to say it.
Okay.
It translates to the tiny man of the forest.
Oh, okay.
From the Maki Mountain Range of the Erwin Jawa, an Indonesian province of New Guinea, which is where we talked about in the first episode.
Right.
So this is the same area.
Okay,
with back. The singing dogs.
Yeah, we're back.
And there's a tiny man that lives out there with the singing dogs.
Well, who do you think taught him to sing?
But yeah. So the guy, I won't tell you what the cryptid was, but all these people started seeing it, and it's in the 1980s. But Flannery feels like he directly recognized what the animal was, and I won't tell you what he thought it was.
Okay.
But it wasn't until May of 1994, when he could conduct a sponsored survey of the wildlife in the region, that he revealed the animal to the picture of the as new to zoology.
Okay.
So located in the dense mossy pine forest and 10,000 feet of elevation on the southern slope of the Maui people homeland, the Bond Edgezo is boldly colored creature with a white star in the middle of its forehead, like it's painted on there. It has long black fur all over its back and its head. Males are like 30 to 40 inches tall and around 30 pounds. It has a tail. It is short. Relatively to its body size, it walks through the forest like a little man. It climbs through the trees like a little man. So the people around it, it was not a mystery to the natives.
Yeah.
They called it the little man of the forest.
Okay.
But he's very, very secretive, and he doesn't go out. Don't Google anything.
There's one thing I in mind, but I have no idea what it's called, but I'm going to try to find it really quick.
No, don't. You just describe it to me, and I'll give you the point if it's right.
Okay.
Because you're never going to get the name of this thing. I couldn't got the name of this thing before this. I knew they're a group. But yeah, really small. They live mostly on the ground. They descend from trees like a human being on their hind legs first. They literally walk on the ground like a person. They climb up the trees like a guy. They literally look like a 30-inch tall guy walking around covered in fur. With a little tiny, like a short tail. When threatened, they put their hands over their head, showing their white belly. And they sound off at the time with whistles.
Oh.
They like you. While the Moe tribe, who revered it, they do not kill it. Apparently, the neighboring tribe, the Dani, do, and they do kill them.
Oh, no.
So the one tribe...
The Dani do?
The Dani do kill them.
They do,
It is from the Dani that Flannery received his first real evidence of the Bone Edge Zoo. It was the skins and other assorted trophies from the creature.
Oh.
So one tribe is like, we love killing those little guys.
Yeah.
And the other tribe is like, those are the men of the woods. Leave them alone. They're harmless. And in June of 1994, Flannery returned to the Australian Museum with the remnants of five of these creatures.
Oh, no.
Thus moving it from cryptid to only known to locals to the status of acceptable animal by Western zoology.
Yay, Western zoology finally accepted. It drives me nuts.
Flannery, and he's been on this list. He's on this list past, and he's going to be on this list in the future.
Nice.
He did a lot of work, right? Good work.
Yeah.
He wasn't the one that killed these guys.
No,
tribe that sent him the pictures were like,
yeah,
this is our cryptid.
Uh-huh.
And the other tribe's like, yeah, we hunt those.
Right, yeah, exactly.
They're fun. So Flannery, as a group of Indonesian Zoologist Museum researchers, decided to release the announcement of their discovery in July of 1994. To this date, still none of these creatures exist in captivity. Any guesses? The Bon Edge Zoo.
Well, I have this. I remember seeing shorts or Facebook, short little videos. There's these videos that are these people are like feeding these little monkey guys. They're like these little monkeys, and their faces, seriously, they just look like, I don't know, not like sad old men, but they just look like an older guy that's just seen a lot, but he's just done talking about it.
Probably macaques of some kind.
But they were like thick little...
Fat little monkeys?
Yeah.
Probably macaques.
They look like little, but they're not like skinny, though.
No, I know. They're like pot-bellied and fat.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there, and they'll watch, and they'll get the food out, and they're just sitting there and watch
like
the whole time.
They look regal.
Yeah, and then once they hand them something...
It's not those.
It's not them? Okay, dang it. Is it some kind of monkey or primate?
No.
Oh, it's not?
Mm-mm. Which I knew where you were going to guess, so wait.
Well, why didn't you let me look then?
Because I knew you were wrong, so I didn't want you to waste a bunch of time doing it.
Okay. Fair.
Because I knew about the group of this. I did not know about this creature, and it's very, very rare.
Is it some sort of zebra?
No, and so it's called the Man of the Forest, not by really the looks of its face, more by its behaviors and how it walks and moves around.
Yeah.
It's a tree kangaroo.
Tree kangaroo?
There's a couple species, but this is the Dingiso.
Okay, I got to get the Google out.
Dingiso.
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 D or G?
D.
Okay. Dingiso.
And now it's actually known from its cryptid name, the Bon Edge Zoo is still what it's called. It's a remarkable species of tree kangaroo that holds a significant place in the biodiversity of New Guinea.
Wow.
Endemic to the central province of New Guinea, specifically northeastern Indonesia, the Dingiso is a unique and extremely endangered animal that captivates its distinctive characteristics and its ecological significance.
Wow, I've never even heard of these things.
I knew of tree kangaroos. I never heard of this one until I started doing this.
Yeah.
And this is one of the more recent ones on this list, 1994.
They look like a mix between like a koala bear.
And a monkey.
A monkey, an actual bear, maybe some hints of a cat in there.
Yeah, it depends on which one you're looking at.
Yeah, they're odd little creatures.
Some of the pictures are not the Dingiso.
Okay.
They're the cousins from Australia.
Okay.
So you got to be careful because some of them, like if they look like they're in captivity.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a different tree kangaroo.
Oh, there's multiple. Yeah, I'm just looking that up. There's multiple.
This one is super, super rare. What distinguishes the Dingiso from other tree kangaroo species is the red-brown fur, the long tail, and its distinctive facial features.
Okay.
It's a star on its head, especially. Its rounded ears and short, stocky limbs are adapted for navigating the rugged terrain of its alpine habitat, setting it apart with its unique and captivating species. So it walks on the ground a lot, and it walks up like a man a lot. It literally just walks around the woods like a little old man.
Hmm.
And the Moe tribe, or however you say it,
yeah,
they revere it heavily as like a woods or a spirit guardian. And the only reason they sent the picture is to get it protection.
Okay. Well, that's the best way to do it.
Because its neighboring tribes were hunting it.
Yeah.
And they're still extremely rare. They are found exclusively in the mountain forests of New Guinea Highlands, primarily on the Central Plateau province. Its restricted range and specific habitat requirements contribute to its vulnerability and its status as a critically endangered species. So just because it only lives in one little spot, and it's very rare, it's very secretive, Conservation efforts are critical to safeguarding the population and preserving its unique genetic heritage. The dingoso thrives in alpine and mountain forest, where it is well adapted to navigating steep and rugged terrain, which is very unusual for a tree kangaroo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, these are cool. I'd never even heard of tree kangaroos.
So
I didn't
dingoso,
know. I didn't know that was a thing.
Or the Bon Edzu.
Hmm.
Which just, like I said, translates to man of the forest or little man of the forest.
I was just looking up pictures of them, but I seen a little fact snippet that was interesting that they spend very little time in trees.
Yeah.
Of all the tree kangaroos, they spend the least amount.
Because they walk around on the ground. They're most adapted for the ground.
That's wild. So what are they related, like in the kangaroo family?
Yeah. Like wallabies, kangaroos. They're marsupials.
Okay, just marsupial.
Like in the mega group of kangaroos, yes.
Right, okay.
There are plenty of kangaroos that quote-unquote kangaroos, that don't look like a red or a gray kangaroo.
Okay, because that's all I thought there was.
No, there's plenty of other, well, like, kangaroos.
Dang.
Like, possums is a huge, diverse group.
Yeah.
Like, there's hundreds of species of possum, and most of them do not look like the Virginia possum.
Gotcha, okay.
Like, a lot of them look like monkeys. Hmm. And quolls are another marsupial group that are, like, a mega group. Or, like, the trilocene is a quoll.
Oh, wow.
When it doesn't look anything like a typical quoll.
No.
So there's like mega groups of these animals that have diversified niches. But yeah, it walks around. It's very, very reminiscent to me of a chimp.
Okay.
Where they spend a lot of time on the ground. They're still able, they're very adept to still going up the trees, getting fruit and insects and other vegetation. But they like to be on the ground. Yeah.
No, these are pretty awesome.
Any questions?
No. These are cool little, never heard of kangaroo, like I said, or tree kangaroo.
Almost, I mean, they were still a cryptid when you were born.
Right, yeah, which is pretty wild to me. The little man of the woods.
The little man of the forest.
He needs some flavors of the forest.
I guess that's where we'll end part two.
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys are still enjoying this. I know it's like a different, when I try to do them different every time. If you're not enjoying it, I can't help you.
Well, yeah, that's not our job.
These are just cryptids.
Yep, these are cryptids.
The once were's.
The once was.
The once was.
Yeah.
I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I have been JClone779.
And we'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.